This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Whether you know it or not, Richard Wagner changed the way you listen to music. The 19th century German composer is well known for his operas, particularly works like Tristan und Isolde, The Ring Cycle, and Parsifal. Not only are they still performed today, but his music and productions marked a change in the very culture of theater. The North Carolina Opera is performing portions of Wagner's works January 27, 3 o'clock, May Mandy Concert Hall at the Progress Energy Center in Raleigh. Joining us now to talk about it are the conductor, Timothy Myers, and lead actress, Elizabeth Bishop. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, thanks, Frank. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. So, Timothy, Wagner, why now?
Well, it's the perfect timing. This is something that we've been interested to do for a while, and this just happens to be the bicentenary of Wagner's birth. So it's a very popular year to be doing this, and we were able to come up with this program that, as opposed to trying to produce a complete Wagner opera, we thought it would be very interesting for audiences to be able to get a real global snapshot of his work.
And I understand it's actually kind of tough to do a real Wagner opera.
It is.
He made it hard on you, didn't he?
It's very, very complex, and, you know, it's a large orchestra, and so, you know, you have to have a massive orchestra pit and a lot of theatrical capabilities. And so the concert format works out really, really well for this. And we have some wonderful singers and a great orchestra.
Tell us about the program.
Well, we're going to start off with the Prelude to Meistersinger, which is very popular. People will recognize that, especially if they're used to attending orchestra concerts, etc. We've got an aria from the Flying Dutchman, which is an interesting thing because that's a very Italianate kind of style work in Verdi's repertoire. So it's interesting for people to hear that contrast.
In Wagner's repertoire.
Yeah, interestingly enough. I mean, if you changed a few chords and put it in Italian, you could almost mistake it for Rossini or something. Then we go back to Meistersinger for a tenor aria from there. Then we do this piece you just heard called The Rite of the Valkyries, which is from Act 3 of Die Walküre, and which people know oftentimes not from actually the opera, but from that's a big in Apocalypse Now. The movie is there. It's also popularly used elsewhere.
Warner Brothers cartoons, that's where I heard it
first. Yep, exactly. And then we finished the first half with the Liebestod, the love death song, which is the aria that Isolde sings at the end of Tristan, which is really, you know, a place where Wagner was really pushing the boundaries of what was happening musically and tonally and harmonically in music at that time. Then the second half is the entirety of Act One of the Valkyrie, which is a really great snapshot of a complete act from the Ring Cycle.
Elizabeth Bishop, what are some of the challenges of performing Wagner?
Well, there are several different types of problems. For one thing, there's nothing strophic.
What does that mean?
That means that it is written, every measure is different from the measure before it. There is nothing, it's not like singing a hymn or a Verdi opera or an aria, you know, from one of the Italian composers where you get several verses with the same tune. This one is, when in any Wagner, it's always changing, it's always different, it's always evolving. And so once you understand the train you're on, then it's easy to stay on. But there is a challenge of adapting yourself into that type of repertoire. Words being one thing. The other is because it's often oversung. I think some of the typical difficulties of Wagner is simply that it became, for about 20 years or so, the repository for old damaged voices.
What do you mean?
Meaning that, I'm certainly not going to call names, but, you know, there was a period of time that became where if you were too ragged out mm-hmm. to sing anything else. You could always go sing Wagner because it was just loud and belty. And people got that impression that, you know, Wagner was simply, you know, the Federation of Wrestling turned into music. And it's not the case. Yeah. It's actually some of the most delicate, intricate singing that you end up having to do. But you have to do it in a way that's smart enough to get through an orchestra. And that doesn't necessarily mean loud. And so there's a style concept that you have to be I wouldn't say mature enough, but you have to be calm enough.
It's kind of
to
a work
well.
Smarter, not harder.
Exactly.
Kind of concept.
Yeah.
Because you talked about it having generally a larger orchestra.
Absolutely.
So it does.
More
it's
fight,
much,
it
much
is,
bigger.
It's big and bold, but you say there's ways of working around and having your voice
That's
over
true.
And against the tones. And
That's
is that
true.
What Timothy meant when he said, you said you were pushing the envelope tonally? Is that something you have to deal with?
No. Tonally, I certainly was not a music theory major, so I'm not going to attempt to sound like I know what I'm talking about, but tonally, Wagner changed the whole lexicon of – with Tristan and Isolde, it was the Tristan chord that sort of turned us into music. Modern music started, basically, people say, with the beginning of Tristan and Isolde, simply because he arranged notes in a certain way that hadn't been done before, and it bridged us into modern music. And so,
resolved them
in a certain way that were unexpected, and it upended the world of people who think that, you know, that kind of thing's important.
That kind of thing. Well, we actually have a sample of that Tristan chord that you referred to. So let's listen to that. Go. The Tristan chord, as we're calling it, from Tristan und Isolde. So is that, and am I understanding this right? This then leads the way, this kind of music, to the modern music of Stravinsky or someone like
that? Yeah, a lot of people would say that Wagner paved the way for even a tonality, through his writing in Tristan. Mm-hmm. Just because it just started kind of pushing the envelope outward, all the way through, and really you hear the tension in that chord and the slow resolution and all the tension and the resolving a different way than you might expect. It would certainly catch your ear back then.
It's so funny because nowadays people who grew up where from the time you were 5 years old, you said your first exposure to Wagner was a cartoon. Mm-hmm. Well, get in line. Everybody's first exposure nowadays was Bugs Bunny riding on the back of the horse dressed like Brunhilde. Uh-huh. You know, that giant fat horse with the tiny feet.
Yeah.
Everybody learned it. So we hear this chord and we think, yeah. But those who were not treated to the cartoon, them, this was a life-changing kind of... What?
Yeah.
Well, was it well received at the time? Because we know some of the more modern attempts were not well received.
Well,
later in
Wagner had become quite well known at that point. I mean, and you know, he was also well known as a conductor and impresario. So he was. I think there are a lot of masterpieces that have had certain critics who have. Who've just bashed something at the premiere that later became being great. But I think that, you know, the important people realized the significance of it. And he had a lot of great admirers like Tchaikovsky and et cetera, et cetera. These people who, you know, were just worshipped at his feet.
I wonder what you do as a singer, as the vocalist, Elizabeth, when, you know, obviously I create this atonal chord by bringing a lot of different instruments at it from a different point of view. Mm-hmm. You only have one note at a time, I'm assuming.
This is
Are
true.
You playing over and against one of those? Do you have to represent that tension theatrically in your voice?
You know what I was saying earlier about knowing how to do things?
Yeah.
Didn't that sound pretentious? You have to know how to color the sound to represent the tension. You know, if you go in there sounding and thinking like Arm & Hammer baking soda, it'll sound like it. But if you go in and you're trying to color the tension, but not with pressure on the voice, but literally with the intent and just coloring the sound.
Well, that did not sound pretentious. On the other hand, good old Wagner, bit of a diva, this guy, right?
Yeah, well.
He's a pain in the aria, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say he was extremely opinionated about everything and has led a lot of other people to be extremely opinionated about him.
I get it. Well, but even the way we enjoy the theater today, he's the guy who dimmed the lights. Tell us about
that. That's right, absolutely. You know, Wagner, he conceived of really things in sort of what they say a Gesamtkunstwerk, like a complete artistic work, and where the theatrical qualities of it were just as significant. And this was so important to him, and especially if you look at like the Ring cycle, where he develops this Norse mythology into this long oeuvre of 15 hours of work. And they were all premiered independently, but then he decided that he wanted to build a theater to house his performances. So he was living in a town called Bayreuth in Germany at that time, and he literally went around and raised the money to build the theater. It was completed. The next summer they held the first Bayreuth festival, and that's when they did the Ring all together for the first time. And this festival still exists today. It's a very vaunted sort of pilgrimage to go. But yes, he designed the theater. He, pioneered the idea of dimming or turning out the lights in the auditorium so that the focus would be completely on the stage. At Bayreuth, he actually designed the orchestra pit so that you can't see the orchestra at all.
Well, so
the audience.
So again, let me get this straight. Before then, the lights were up, and I guess it was a bit of a brawl there. It was a little like the Globe Theater, people wielding turkey.
Well, I think no, that's kind of a funny image.
Only on the floor level.
Yeah, right, exactly. Only in the expensive seats.
The things they were doing in the boxes, you can't talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think things were much less formal. Know that, in performances earlier than that, people would sort of come and go, or in Paris, people might be interested mostly in seeing the ballet part of the opera, so they would show up for that, or they would only show up for the second act, or they would come and go during certain scenes. So, his image was just to make it sort of a one image, that's right there on the stage, and all of the focus is there, and that's why you're there, period.
Though it does make it easier to sneak in and out if the lights are down.
Good point.
Hey, we have to handle this because there are still people who will say, I can't listen to Wagner because it became... it was appropriated by the Nazis. It was the soundtrack of German nationalism, anti-Semitism, all bound up in work that I don't think Wagner intended, but certainly came associated with his work.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people understandably grapple with. And I remember, the famous Jewish conductor Daniel Barenboim, when I was a student in Berlin, when he played Wagner at a concert in Israel. And I remember seeing the Berliner Morgenpost the next morning, and it says in German, this huge headline on the front page, Barenboim has played Wagner in Israel. And it really sparked an interesting dialogue in my mind, kind of thinking about this and talking to some of my German friends and some of my Jewish friends, and, how do you feel about this? And, I like to think of it as, there are a lot of artists with whom I don't agree on their worldview. And I certainly would hold some of the things that Wagner did or mostly wrote in reproach. The art is amazing. And I think, I see a lot of people sort of coming to terms with that and saying, okay, as we get distance from these things, we're able to more separate the art from the artist and maybe his political leanings and some things that he chose to write that were really not appropriate. And the people who chose to adopt his music as their theme music, sort of, who knows, that happened to people who held the same political views or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think we live in a different expectation situation nowadays, because you've got people like George Clooney and Leonardo DiCaprio and everybody who gets their 15 minutes feels required to put political beliefs out or put some of their opinion, as if anyone cared what they think. All hail to your own opinion, keep it to yourself. But what we've done is we're taking, I mean, Wagner is dead. All the bad guys who liked his music are dead. And the people who are now trying to ratchet something out of something that's been a belief, you know, he was an odious little man, personally. I wouldn't eat dinner with him, but I would spend the rest of my life singing his music because I choose not to pick trouble out of the past. And so I understand the problems, but I really wish people would not do it because I'm afraid that they're going to turn some people off that might genuinely love this music because they insist on being offended somehow. And I'm so afraid of that happening. So.
Timothy, one last question. This area now and its support for opera, you're able to stage these wonderful performances and it's still going strong? The appetite's still strong?
It's amazing, Frank. In fact, I would encourage people who are interested in attending this performance on Sunday to call today because it's going to sell out. We have very few tickets left, and so you should get in touch immediately. So I really love being here and love being the artistic director and principal conductor of this company because the appetite is so broad too. Last year we did a Philip Glass piece, you know, then we have Verdi and then we have Wagner, and people are just coming out. They're excited about it and they're bringing their friends and they're telling everybody they know. It's really thrilling that we're able to do this. And as far as we know, this is the triangle premiere of any complete act of the Ring cycle. And maybe in North Carolina, 150 years after it was written. So I think it's pretty darn cool that we get to do that here.
Thank you both for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Timothy Myers, conductor of the North Carolina Opera's Wagner Concert. Elizabeth Bishop, lead actress, the performance, January 27th, 3 o'clock, May Mandy Concert Hall, Progress Energy Center in Raleigh. Go to ncopera.org for more information. That's our program. We're at stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Alex Granados and Sean Wen, Nicole Campbell and Dave DeWitt. Christina Blythe is our intern. Robin Copley, the technical director. Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.